Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 3 of the Field Pass. This is Dan, and with me today I have John, and coming to us live from California, Mikey Dudek. How's it going?
Hey guys. Good. Apologize, you know, can't be in our, you know, 5-star studio for this episode. I'm calling in from the West Coast, you know, watched the game out here on Saturday and, you know, was eating breakfast at kickoff versus, you know, normally eating lunch. But, you know, it's weather's great out here and, you know, it's good to be out here. But looking forward to being back and getting in the studio with you boys.
Do you you think you're going to come back?
I don't know. You know, it doesn't feel like real life out here. You know, you wake up every day, it's 75 degrees and sunny, and you know, it's tough to not be happy out here, that's for sure.
So what have you been up to? Catalina Island, I think I saw. What else?
Yes. Yeah, so yesterday, girlfriend and I went out to Catalina Island, and I don't know, have you guys ever been there?
I haven't, no.
No, it looks, it's actually owned by the Wrigley family. They own the entire island, which was new to me, yeah. And it's something, you know, like if you were just to wake up there and like someone for whatever reason dropped you there, you would think you were in Europe. It's a very unique place. Definitely does not feel part of the U.S., but it was good. And then, you know, just relaxing, going to the beach, went boating today and ate at a couple good restaurants. And yeah,
no complaints.
No complaints. Never.
Any good? You've been doing some recruiting out there. You find any good 5-star pieces for future Illinois classes out there yet?
Trying. You know, I'm right in Orange County over here, which is, you know, the mecca of high school football in California. So I'll see what I can do. You know, maybe I'll I don't think they're doing high school football out here, but maybe I'll go see if there's any 7-on-7 or anything and drop them a business card to get them up to Champaign.
A Matter Day or a St. John Bosco, you know, 5-star talent. Pluck them away from the Pac-12 or something like that.
Exactly. Pluck them away from USC. You know, maybe I'll go to the campus, USC's campus or UCLA, and see if any of those boys are out there practicing. Yeah, I know.
Some grad
a
transfers.
A ton of transfers.
A couple Bebes.
Yeah. Yeah. Bebe times two. Been good to the program. So maybe I'll try to get some more of them out there for us.
Good. Well, we have a lot of catching up to do here on this episode, recapping Purdue. A lot to talk about. Obviously, a pretty close game, and I mean, we got to start with, I think, the COVID news, which is, you know, the biggest piece going into that game, which was the unknown, starting a fourth string quarterback, and then trying to bring in a fifth string at one point. But I think that was something that surprised a lot of people on Friday or Saturday going into the game. And
yeah, I think it's pretty hilarious timing for our podcast. We have it the first week where we give our picks to click, and then you know, we have, like, I have Isaiah Gay being out because he was suspended, and then the next week we tape on Wednesday, and there weren't even, I think the rumors started swirling either Wednesday night or Thursday. Obviously, we weren't going to comment on anything, or nothing was going to be confirmed. But then, of course, you know, Mikey's pick to click, Brandon Peters is out, and then Isaiah is out because of contact tracing. And then you got to go in with Matt Robinson, who then gets hurt on the first series. And then, oh, all of a sudden now we have a true freshman who had no camp really because of the whole pandemic, is now the backup in case Karan Taylor goes out. And luckily Karan kind of, I guess, acquitted himself nicely. I don't know. We can dive into that more, but yeah, the COVID news is, and how many people then were subsequently out, was pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, that was unreal. You know, obviously we knew going into this season that, you know, there were going to be some weeks and, you know, likely more than a few weeks of this type of news popping up. But, you know, just you got to move forward with what you got, because unfortunately it's, you know, it's affecting everybody around the world and, you know, affecting every team across the country. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And, you know, if you are a backup, you got to make sure you're preparing like you're a starter. Because, you know, like you mentioned Saturday, you know, we had a fourth string quarterback going out there and playing somebody who really, you know, wasn't getting those reps during the week of practice. So it's strange times, that's for sure.
And I thought Caron Taylor, you know, given the circumstances, played a pretty good game and, you know, gave the team a chance. Obviously, you know, came down to the last drive and there was a fourth down that they weren't able to convert, but got him into the red zone, you know, with a chance to tie or potentially win the game on a 2-point conversion. And had you told me before the game that Caron Taylor was going to be, you know, taking the majority of the snaps at the quarterback position, I would not have, you know, I wouldn't have had my original Illinois blowout prediction, but B, I probably wouldn't have even had Illinois, you know, coming within a touchdown like they did.
Yeah, I guess I kind of got lucky that that Caron went out there and performed so nicely, because I almost called the score perfectly.
Yeah, you were almost dead on.
Yeah, and technically Illinois did cover, because with the whole COVID news, the line ballooned from 7 to 10 or 11, I want to say. So it was one of those really, if you listened to the pod on Saturday morning and took my advice, then I guess you took any of our advice, because we all picked them to cover. But it was definitely, I don't know, the fact that you go out there and if you tell me that with fourth string quarterback, you only punt twice in a game against Purdue, that you would lose, obviously that doesn't take into account all the context, because you have turnovers as well that you just got massacred in. But I'd be feeling pretty good if it was Blake Hayes only getting out there twice in one game against Purdue, no matter who the quarterback is.
Yeah. Do you think, I'm kind of surprised the line, to be honest, only moved to 10. Like, I feel like Brandon Peters at quarterback makes more of a difference for the Illini than 3 points or whatever the line was able to shift to. And maybe that would have settled more had the news come out earlier. But to me, I think a player like Brandon Peters and, you know, versus Caron Taylor, who, like I said, was able to throw the ball around and spread it around a little bit, played pretty well, but a kid that's not taking many practice snaps versus the guy who's your guy, you know, 3 points of a difference to me. I mean, this is just talking Vegas, talking betting here, but I'm kind of surprised that 3 points is all it moved.
That's probably a little information asymmetry as well, just because we know more about Illinois, because we're obviously more tuned in the program. You got people making lines in the gates who are going to be more reactive to actual news, and they can't adjust the line based off Matt Robinson. Well, they probably didn't even know about Isaiah. Like, that line might have been adjusted. Okay, we see Brandon Peters is out, and then you can't adjust it even more for Isaiah, but then you don't know what the difference between Isaiah and all those things. So it's a little info asymmetry on part of.
So what do you think? I mean, seeing Caron out there as more of a, I guess, more advertised as a running quarterback, and obviously, I mean, he technically ran the ball 17 times or whatever it was, but, you know, he had one big run, and a lot of them were tackled in the backfield or, you know, getting a little happy feet and trying to escape the pocket and not gaining many yards. But obviously that adds a different element to your offense when you have a guy who can move the ball with his feet at the quarterback position. Is that something you guys would like to see? You know, maybe he's not your top guy, but if you have the option between a Matt Robinson, who's, I'll say, I guess, more of a pocket passer than your typical, than a player like Caron Taylor, who, you know, gives you more of a threat to run the ball, do you like maybe the better arm versus the trade-off of a guy who can run?
I personally like, I thought Caron came in, you know, he did make some bonehead plays. You know, I'm sure anybody who was watching the game could agree on that, you know, threw a couple interceptions and, you know, a couple fumbles, and it's just like, what are you doing? You know, but just this kid, you know, he hasn't played since high school, right? He's going into his third season. He hasn't had any live, real snaps, you know, meaningful snaps in over 4 years. So for him to come in, you know, I'm sure you know, he's got to know the playbook by now. He's in this quarterback meetings every day, but you know, in terms of him going out there and, you know, doing it, getting those reps with the ones, you know, he performed really well for, you know, being so new to doing that. And I think that's what the running quarterback can add to this offense, you know, just a different layer of somebody going out there, you know, adding another attack point that, you know, you're not going to get out of, you know, somebody like a Matt Robinson, who's a little less athletic than Karan. But I think, you know, ultimately, like a guy like Brandon Peters, who, you know, has a good arm and is serviceable in the run game, is ultimately what you're looking for. But when you either have, you know, the good arm or the decent arm and a good runner, I think in order to fully run and mature the offense, I think, you know, somebody like Karan definitely, you know, fits that mold pretty well and did well. So hopefully, you know, he can keep it up now that, you know, I'm sure Brandon will be out a couple weeks.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those where Karan not having, to speak to your point, Mikey, those live snaps. I know that there were some issues that the coaching staff had, you know, reading over the past couple of years. Does Karan have the accuracy or the decision-making ability to be a bend quarterback? And for, to a degree, we saw that on display where, you know, he obviously had a couple suspect decisions and that interception in the red zone. I think that's kind of a case of both his inaccuracy where he's throwing it to the inside shoulder of Donnie when he should either be putting it on him or to the outside, or just or also making a better decision and not forcing it there to begin with. But I think it's also a problem of, you know, he's not seeing any live snaps. He's probably running scout team most weeks and not really getting any game time decision you know, play with the ones. So it's one of those where I think he's probably the better option, especially, and I was talking to a couple people, both in person on Twitter, and they were wondering if Matt Robinson or if Brandon Peters is in that game, do we win? And I honestly don't really know. Now, granted, we only had the sample size of the Wisconsin game, which maybe you could just throw out entirely, but Rod Smith seemed like he was more comfortable having a quarterback who at least is perceived to be a better athlete than Brandon Peters, where you had that AJ Bush style. Okay, you know, at the very least, we can default to a run play where it's both the quarterback and the running back are options to threaten the defense. And I mean, you guys both know that I think that Brandon's a better weapon on the ground than maybe some other people think, but at the very least, maybe Rod was a little bit more calm and settled in and had a better game from his perspective. And if you just execute a little bit better, then maybe you come out with a W and maybe you wouldn't if you had Brandon back there. I don't know. It's just my thoughts.
I was a little surprised early on in a good way. I thought Karan stepped into a couple passes where he just ripped them across the middle. And I was sitting there, John and I watched the game together, and I turned to John and was like, he just absolutely threw a dart right in there across the middle. I think it was like a nice little post route or something. And I was very surprised. He's looking a little skinnier this year than I think he has in the past, but I wasn't expecting, you know, cause he's been painted more as a running quarterback to have that kind of arm on him. So, you know, seeing him throw the ball like that when he's stepping into it, there were a few times he got, like I said, a little happy feet in the pocket where I think he had a pretty clean pocket and, you know, made a quick read and decided I should probably get out of this instead of either staying in there and going through his progression or taking off and running. But, you know, he seems to have the arm talent to make some Big Ten throws, which I like that prospect going into next week if he gets a few more reps in practice this week.
Yeah, definitely. You know, going back to my playing days, I caught balls from Karan, and I think what we saw on Saturday was he makes some throws where you're like, this guy's, you know, he's got the arm of a Big Ten quarterback, right? And then he's got throws where you're like, what is he doing? You know, is this a high school kid out there? So I think once he matures and gets that consistency, which I think will come through those live reps and, you know, the experience of being out there, being able to read, you know, live defense is on the fly and, you know, getting that one-on-one coaching that the starting quarterback gets, I think he will slowly start to become the better passer. You know, we see that he has the tools to get it done. He just needs to start doing it more consistently now. And I'm pretty sure I texted you guys during the game and was like, okay, like what Quran are we going to get here on this drive? Because it really seemed like it was turnover or bust, or turnover or, you know, big play. And you can't win games like that. Although we nearly did, that's not a good recipe to win games. So once he starts, you know, bringing in that more consistent accuracy and the consistent throws on his decision making, I think he can be really successful in the Big Ten and especially in this offense.
Yeah, which is why I think the staff probably defaulted to Matt Robinson to start, because he isn't as volatile as Karan. But and we did only see, you know, one series from Matt Robinson. I still have my not doubts, but I have my reservations about him as a Big Ten quarterback, because he had a pretty effective first drive. It wasn't like he was completely useless back there, but he feels phantom pressure way too much. And also, I just don't think he can see over the offensive line, if I'm being quite fair. He makes one read, maybe two, and then he's trying to find a side of the field so that he can either escape and scramble. And now he's good in the sense where he always has his eyes downfield. So he's not, okay, I'm immediately tucking and running, and that's immediately eliminating a defense's responsibility for anything downfield. So he's good in the sense that he'll keep his eyes up, but he just can't stay in the pocket. And that's you're limiting your offense if you can't have a guy sit there for when he has 3 to 5 seconds, he's got to be able to sit back there. So that's where, even though Karan had some of the same issues where he wasn't going through his progressions, obviously, I think that can be chalked up more to his inexperience and his maybe lack of maturity. Whereas I think Matt Robinson is just, he either can't see or it's just ingrained in him to, all right, I got to get outside the pocket and try to make a play on the run, either passing or throwing. Or passing or running. So
yeah,
it's I definitely think that Karan's probably the better option, even though he is the more volatile option, just because he has, in my opinion, a better arm in terms of being able to cut the ball and better legs in terms of being able to sustain big plays.
That just goes back to Lovey, obviously, his preference, and he seems to value protecting the football over all else, as he's said, you know, time and time again, if we can eliminate those mistakes. So I think and I don't know that it's the right thing to do necessarily, but that's obviously his preference based off what we've seen of who he's sent out there at the quarterback position. You know, maybe favoring a guy that might not have the ceiling, but has a higher floor and isn't going to lose you ball games.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of how they play defense too. It almost is one of those where you can't have two volatile styles on both offense and defense. If you have Karan as the quarterback and then you have a defense that's either, oh, hey, we're going to try and get a turnover here, and if we don't, then probably going 90 yards on us and giving up a touch. Like, you can't have
boomer bust on both sides of the field.
You can't have two extremes, because I guess if you play your cards right, then you can get a game where you
double
go
boom.
Above. Yeah, yeah, exactly. 5-10 on some bulls. But if you're relying on that when you don't quite have the talent, I don't know if that's quite the strategy, which is, like you were saying, Dan, probably why Lovey and Rod talk about it. And we're going to go with Matt Robinson because he's probably the safer option.
Yeah. I thought transitioning it to the offensive line a little bit, to be honest, like I watched the game back, and there were some really, really good holes open by the offensive line on some of those runs. I know Chase Brown had a couple nice ones, and Mike Epstein had a few nice runs. And on all of those runs, it was almost textbook blocking from those guys, and PFF put out their grades, and I think at least Vidarian and Alex Palchewski, both those guys had over 80 grades, which is very high in terms of that grading scale. And then I know Kendrick Green got shifted over to center for the game, and he put up a pretty high score, pretty close to a 70. And then you had a former walk-on Alex Pilstrom that got thrown in at left guard taking over. And Invertis Brown as well. And those guys put together a pretty good game, I thought, you know, providing some clean pockets for the quarterbacks and some really nice running lanes for our running backs.
Yeah, I thought, you know, echoing everything you just said there, Dan, you know, quarterback out, you know, starting center out, walk-on guy going in. You know, I would have expected a lot worse out of our offense. You know, we were just chatting before this, and, you know, we outgained them in total yards and put up close to 500 yards with, you know, backups with one of our starting quarterback, fourth string, you know, backup center. I would not have expected this, if I'm being completely honest, you know, going into the game. Just my dad sent me over the list of guys. There was like 12 guys or something out. And he's like, who are we going to have playing? You know, because, you know, you only hear about the starters. But, you know, like I said, you know, early on in the show, you got to, with 2020 this year, everything being, you know, extremely different and strange, you got to prepare like you're the starters. And, you know, I thought those guys that came in, they all stepped up for the most part and, you know, did their role.
Yeah. Deep down the depth chart, too.
Yeah, real deep.
Yeah, I think the line did really well, especially in pass blocking. There are some issues. I think Virtus is obviously a work in progress and not going to be a polished prospect immediately, even though he obviously was one of the more highly touted Lovie commits of recent vintage. But the pass blocking, surprisingly good. They had a lot more time than I think, and we were just talking about the quarterbacks having happy feet. Yeah. But if you have Brent Peters back there getting that kind of time, I think you have at least, 25-30% more effective
800 yards of offense.
Probably. Yeah. Maybe Purdue's defense makes our quarterback then look like a Heisman contender. I don't know. But the running game, there is still some, I mean, you know, you're starting a walk-on and, you know, a dude who's getting his second career start. There were still some issues with getting up to the second level, and I think Virtus is still kind of learning how he's got to read, you know, his combos up to the second level and getting out there in enough time. Like, sometimes he's got there were a few plays where he was either staying on his man a little bit too long or just not able to physically get out to the outside and get the linebacker who then made a tackle for either, you know, 1 yard or maybe a TFL. And that's one of those where especially against coming up against Minnesota, there's going to have to be more of a consistent rushing attack and probably generating 3 or 4 yards on those carries instead of, hey, we got a nice 18 yard carry, but then we followed up with a carry for 1 yard and then a 2 yard loss. So
I want to give a little shout out to Kendrick Green for that snap on the offside. Yes. From that DN.
I know you both are loving that. Yeah.
I was hyped.
Finally.
Wasn't that on like 4th and 5 or 3rd?
Yes.
And 5.
Fourth
was a big
and five.
Play, right?
It was 4th and 5, and he saw the DN jump, and he snapped it right away. And I mean, the offensive line didn't move, obviously, but he turned and looked at him too, just to really
Karan
sell
was
the
not
official.
Looking for the ball at all.
Well, I
Karan
think
dropped it.
Myself included. I, when I saw that, I was like, "Oh my god, what just happened?" But then I saw the flag come out, and I was like, "Nice play, Kendrick." Because we were talking about that last show. You know, like you got to do it because it's a free play, right?
And he had a couple more opportunities earlier in the game too, so I'm glad he finally took. And that's probably one of those where, you know, it's his first game back at center. Well, I guess he started the bowl game and Northwestern there. But in terms of, you know, his consistency at that position, it hasn't been until since high school. So he's probably, you know, making sure he's not doing anything stupid early in the game and crossing his team yards. But I'm glad that, he finally got around to it. But, man, that was actually in my head. I was holding my breath until I saw the flag because jump that much. Like, that was pretty. If I was a Purdue fan, I would kind of be like, oh, he could have had time to get back, or he didn't go over
it was
that
close.
Much. Yeah,
he sold so it. I think where he paused and just stared at him.
Exactly.
I was hyped.
But I'm glad they finally got around to it. Hopefully, we can see. Okay, we've gotten one. We went from zero. We got one. Now, hopefully, we can get two or three the next game because you're going to have those opportunities. It's going to continue to be a thing. The hard count is going to be used at quiet stadiums, and you got to be able to take advantage of that. And hopefully, they do next week.
So that was a fourth down. There was another big fourth down in the game, which I thought, honestly, it was a pretty bonehead decision by Jeff Brohm when he had the ball and Purdue had the ball down at the one. And it was 4th and 1. They're up two touchdowns, I think, at the time. I think they're up 14, and they could have kicked a field goal to make it a 3-score game. Instead, Jeff Brohm, in typical Jeff Brohm fashion, decides he wants to pour it on and run a play. So they went for it, and that was a huge stand for the defense on that play.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, whenever you're down in the red zone, you know, things get tight down there. There's not going to be those open holes, you know, that we see. Because, you know, I see people saying, you know, whenever we get, you know, within the 20-yard line, our defense seems to do pretty well. But it's just that there's not a lot of spacing back there, right? So when you are down there, you know, you can put, you know, 7-8 guys in the box, load up, and, you know, man-on-man on the outside. And, you know, we did a good job. But, you know, I was listening to those announcers say they must have faith in their defense. And then what happened a few plays later? The fumble for a touchdown, I believe it was. So, yep. You know, good job by our defense. You know, our offense just got to limit those bonehead mistakes.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing, too, is that when you're gifted a – because I don't really – I love the shift to the analytical-based decisions where, okay, if it's 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-2 and you're not backed up inside your own 25, then most coaches are now even just thinking about going for it. So I at least can understand Brohm's aggression there. But at the same time, if you're him, like, what are you doing, dude? Like, your offense has been running it up and down the field against the Illini defense all day. So I guess maybe that was his confidence. But at the same time, even if your defense starts not being able to stop him, you have the confidence that, all right, we can maintain this. We don't need 7 points here. Let's make it a 3-score game in case something miraculous happens, which it almost did. And it's just it's so confusing that college coaches especially, because – you don't see it happen too much in the pros, but college coaches just don't understand basic math, whether it's like clock management or possessions and how many, whether you should go for a field goal or if you should try and take a shot to the end zone. It's just confusing, but hey, it almost worked out in our favor. But then, yeah, it's one of those where Karan probably that's such a weird call too, to go with fake run. There was a no handoff. It was like a fake handoff to then a speed option where then you immediately have the defense collapse on you. And it felt like Karan was like, all right, I might pitch it here. And then as he's pulling it back in, he's already thinking too much about the ball and not about the guy hitting him. And then I got bopped in the head. So now the ball's falling all over the field. And I was just, that's a kind of suspect play call in my opinion.
I agree, man. I was sitting there like, you know, obviously Rod knows more about offense than any of us. But I was still sitting there. Yeah, no, but I was sitting there like, okay, we're on the our goal line trying to get out. You're going to run a speed option with our 4th-string quarterback, and options seem easy, but pitches, like, there's a lot of timing that goes into those, right?
Yeah.
So when he called that, I was like, what? Like,
especially the guy who's not in rhythm hasn't been out there to
exactly right. Those. He probably said no reps with the, you know, first and second string running backs. Been running with the scout team all week. Why are you going to run something that requires so much rhythm and so much repetition on our own goal line?
Yeah. And just chemistry, even just like knowing if Chase Brown, or even it doesn't matter who the running back is, but seeing, okay, I should be expecting a pitch here, or I can keep kind of bowing out. Just even that basic bit of chemistry where they know, okay, if there's a defender coming at me, or if I see him kind of playing both of us, then I'm going to cut it up the field and you can either follow me or then you try and go find a block or something. Like, it's just, there's so much chemistry that goes into a play with that kind of reliance on two people. And you just don't have – you can't be doing that inside your own 10-yard line.
And we can even flash back to last week when Isaiah ran that pitch to Chase Brown.
Yep.
And we talked about the spacing was a little too close. And, like, that should be an example of that play.
And
you know,
they
not
ran it to the short side of the field.
I know. At least this one wasn't to the short side of the field with Karan.
I'm just still miffed about
that. I still don't.
Sorry.
Yeah, but it was on the 1-yard line. Plays. I don't love stretch plays and short. I mean, it wasn't short yards, but you need to get yourself out of the end zone. So
and short clear yards, a couple
like
yards,
3rd-and-1s, 4th-and-1s. When a team throws or not throws, but you know, runs a stretch play, that always irritates me. Instead of just trusting your O line, which is supposed to be so good, just run hard right behind them and fight for those 2 yards.
But especially when like your freaking punter is the best player on your team, you know, he's gonna worst case scenario, you know, if you get out to the 7-yard line and you got a punt, he's gonna bomb it, you know, right? He's gonna Yeah, like he's going to put your defense in a good position. Like it's not the end of the day when your drive ends in a punt. Yeah. I one of my coaches said to me one time, every good drive ends in some sort of kick, aka true. Don't turn the ball over, right? And when when you have such a valuable asset to your team and your punter, you know, trust in him, right? Just get the ball out. Don't make mistakes, because you know that score, you know, was huge for Purdue.
Those two punts, though, Blake Hayes, the first one that almost was downed at the one was a pretty good punt. Just barely missed out on that one. Just pinning him deep, and then the second one almost looked like he was throwing a pass with his foot. Like he paused for 2 seconds and waited for the Gunners to get down there, and then he just so calmly just coffin corners it and almost right to him where he didn't even have to move. Can we put Blake Hayes at quarterback with his foot? Just start kicking the ball around the field.
He's incredible. I think we need to do like a 15-minute segment on him a week, because I could talk about him for the full hour of this thing. I just think he's incredible at what he does. And, you know, I think he's a huge asset to our team. He's going to play a lot of football over the next few years of his playing career.
Might be a pick of the week next week, since Robert didn't take him this past week. So
I can't pick him, because anybody I pick either doesn't play or gets one pass thrown.
We're really bad.
Leaving Blake out of our pick-ems.
Yeah. Start picking like guys 3 or 4 spots down the depth chart and just hope they don't play, because if they do, it's trouble.
I'm picking Pfeiffer Griffin to have a great game. But yeah, no, Blake Hayes is unreal, and it's the one, I don't know about you guys, but when I go back and I watch the games, I still have that kind of same sense of dread and anticipation when, you know, it's either the offense has a 3rd and 7 and you already know that they don't get it, but when you're watching the game, you're like, oh man, like this is going to take some kind of, you know, great individual play by either the quarterback or wide receiver. You don't quite have that consistency driven into your brain as a fan to expect the outcome to be good. Blake is one shining aspect of this team where you're just like, oh yeah, it's 4th down. Like, it's not going to go that poorly. I mean, maybe if he outkicks his coverage one time and they get a nice return, then that's the only real issue you could have. But otherwise, I mean, when you get that where he's pinpointing them and he's throwing darts and inside the 10 and the 20, it's
uber confidence.
It's good times.
Yeah, like I don't know. I feel like I'm getting so used to it that like I'm not surprised when it happens, right? But it is so difficult. Granted. Yeah, like it is so difficult to do what he does. And, you know, when he's off the team next year and whoever steps up to, you know, be punter, hopefully they're as good as him. But if they're not, you know, like we're going to really see, you know, how special he is.
I mean, he seems to have the ball on a string when he punts it. It seems like every time I know it's going to be inside the 20, but like, I almost feel like every punt he hits is going to land at the 10 and either roll forward and his guys are going to hopefully stop it before it gets to the goal line, or just going to bounce out of bounds perfectly at like the 10 and give the opponents some difficult field position to start their drives.
Also, fun teaching moment for the podcast that we can do, because I was explaining a little bit to Dan, I think, and also to some family members when it wasn't even the Illinois college game. They changed up the rule recently where it's the ball that matters in college. So in the NFL, you can have it where a dude makes an unreal athletic play where he puts his feet on right before the goal line and throws the ball back to
jumps over the line and throws it back.
Exactly.
You can't do
that
in college.
That's completely acceptable. In college, what I think, if I was a special teams coordinator, if I was a head coach, I obviously would be perfect because – I'm so smart and do
armchair
everything right.
Quarterback. No
exactly.
Mistakes.
Exactly. Nothing I say is ever wrong. But I would have, if there was like a ball that's rolling or possibly moving, just put your heels on the goal line or just kneel down or do something to then block the ball if it's rolling towards the goal line, because
it doesn't
the ball
matter.
Is what matters. It's not the player. The player can be out of bounds or not technically not established in the field of play, but it's all about the ball. So that's why that first punt, there was like some confusion. It was pretty obvious after that first bounce when Marquez was I think that, yeah, it was Marquez. Yep. Yeah, when he's jumping and trying to do what you see happen in the pros, it's like that ball is immediately at the touchback.
Gotta get legs on him.
Liggs is coaching that up. Trust me.
Just like a general note.
Yeah. No, he used to tell us, and this like will forever stay in my mind. Like the right where the green meets the white, the end zone, the start of the end zone. Picture like a wall there going from there all the way up to the moon, right? And as soon as any part of that ball crosses over any bit of that, it's dead.
Yep.
So that whenever he told me that, now whenever I see a ball rolling down there, I just think about that like imaginary wall.
We just need to just have someone lay across the 1 yard line, just, you know, in a full plank and just stack guys up and build like a wall of players and let the ball hit it. But I guess the ball's not.
It's like why you should a 350-pound sumo wrestler is like a goalie in hockey. Just get like your biggest dude, just put like Moses Okpala on punt coverage and get him out there and just catch everything before it gets to the end zone.
We'll refrain from any build a wall references when we're
I was gonna say talking tall walls in early November.
Yeah,
we're really getting
it was not a political statement.
Nope.
Yeah, Blake Hayes confirmed good.
Let's shift away from special teams.
And also, yeah, we ended up talking about special teams again for like.
I know we get so hyped up about the special teams, but
special teams are talk about the wind and the and special teams.
Yeah, I mean, when Blake Hayes is the number one punter and Heisman front runner, it's hard not to talk about him.
Yep, we called it here. But no, defense. What did you guys think? Out of the first drive, man, Brom carved us up.
He did.
When I was watching that, I was like, yep. Oh, no, this is going to be a long game. Yeah. What were you guys thinking about that? We looked like Swiss cheese out there.
So I think it's still an issue that two games is kind of a small sample size. And I think what we're seeing is that Lovey is obviously still – Mikey, you can speak to this too, but we all know this. He still keeps his – pro tendencies as a coach. He treated those non-con games, in my opinion, as like preseason games in the NFL, where okay, you're tuning up and you're getting things figured out so that when Big Ten season comes around, you know, we were talking, I think it was on Robert's pod, but we were talking about the safeties and how it was like Kirby Joseph and Stanley Green, and that got mixed up all the way until they finally found Sidney Brown and Stanley Green for the majority of the back half of last season. And it's one of those where you can't have those kind of tune-ups in the middle of Big Ten play because you're going to have good talent at the quarterback and wide receiver position. That's going to be, and even the running game too, you know, you're getting chunk plays all over the place. And it's one of those where they did shore it up to their credit in the second half. But when you look at the stat line and it's okay, both quarterbacks that have gone up against the U of I defense, if you put them up combined, then they'd be in the front running for the Heisman. Not really what you want to be seeing from a, your fifth year head coach who's got his seniors on his defense. And like I said, I'm hoping that it's just that he needs to get into the film room, see what they're doing wrong. And he's like, okay, here's our 2-game sample size and here's what we need to correct. It's not just, I'm telling you this in practice. I don't know, but I'm hoping that that's the case.
Yeah,
that's what I'm hoping, is that he's finally like, okay, we need to make the tune-ups now instead of, okay, we got Akron and we had some issues, but we ended up
getting away with it in those games versus coming through the Big Ten slate and just, you know, getting worked by.
But still, not great. Not great that you have a walk-on quarterback Stevenson coming and light it up.
And the players, for the most part, that were out didn't really affect the defense. So it's, you can't even turn to that and say, you know, had we had all our guys out there, maybe it's different. It seemed like we had pretty much who we wanted out there. And like Mikey said, that first drive, they march right down, not a whole lot of resistance. I was concerned from the get-go that was how the whole day was going to go. And they did turn it around in the second half and played a little better. But, I mean, giving up those early points always comes back to haunt you.
Yeah, and I don't know, man. Like, just whenever the opposing quarterback drops back and, you know, has, you know, 2 to 3 seconds, I'm just sitting there, like, holding my breath. Like, here we go. Yeah. He's about to unleash and send a 40 bomb. Yards
minimum.
Yeah, and that's generally what happens. So, I don't know. It's something we need to fix in the back half of our defense, because to me, there's still too much holes, and it feels like if a team wants, you know, if the team needs the yards, they're going to get them. And, you know, especially on that last play, single coverage on their best player, all 1,000 people in the stadium and, you know, 20,000 people watching the game knew who the ball was going to.
Yep.
You know, it's just, it's,
it was a great, it was a great play to their credit. I mean, great. Unreal catch. You're not defending that unless you have a guy, you double teaming him, you know, from the start of that play. But
yeah, throw someone over top, you know,
it gave me a little solace where I like, I got more frustrated and disappointed at the result of the game when I went back and watched it, because in that immediate aftermath, I was like, oh, well, it was kind of a microcosm of the game where they just threw it up to their best player and we actually played pretty good defense and, you know, they just beat us with their best player making an unreal catch. But at the same time, that's obviously not what happened for the majority of the game. We
right.
just were letting up way too much. Mikey even was talking about it, and we were talking about bracketing on the last podcast. It's as simple as, if you want to say, okay, well, they might still run that fade route, well, then you put Nate Hobbs on outside leverage and make him steer him Bell inside, yeah. and then you have safety help over the top, or even a linebacker at the hook to curl, so that if, you know, he tries to run a dig, then okay, there just has to be some sort of, like Danny was calling it, a box in one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the analogy where you just have to make sure you're accounting for every single zone that that guy is going to be going to, because it's 3rd and 10 yeah. and you know, Brahm's got the balls to throw it on 3rd and 10. I mean, he had stupidity to throw it on 2nd and 10 and then almost bit him in the butt. But then you know that he's got the guts to go for it on 3rd and 10 to try and end the game. And then it's all right. Well, now the game's over and we almost had it with like a minute and a half left, and that would have been unreal.
Was there a timeout in between that last play? And I feel like there was some sort of commercial or something before that 4th down play. Do you remember if there was, or was it just
between 2nd and 3rd down?
No, between 3rd and 4th. Or the was it? It was 4th down where they threw it to Bell.
No, it was 3rd.
No,
down.
It was 3rd.
Oh,
down.
That was on 3rd down. You're right. Was there some sort of pause between that? For some reason, I thought there was a big like break, and I'm like, if Lovey's coming out of a timeout and he doesn't coaches guys up that, like, hey, keep your eye on Bell, that's kind of on him to
I felt like they threw it on, did they? I know they threw it on like 3rd or 2nd down that drive. It was 2nd down, then they
went off. Remember it went up in the air.
Yeah, that's the almost
O'Connell
pick
added it down.
Yeah.
So that's what happened in the play before, which is what I was saying was stupid, because you shouldn't be doing that and just be draining time.
I'm pretty sure Purdue called timeout right after that. And then there was a commercial break, and we were waiting for the play, and then they came back, and it went to Bell. And I was just thinking, man, all that time Lovey had in the huddle to say, you know, keep your eyes on number 3, and, you know, we left him alone, and he made a great catch. So tip your cap.
Yeah, I mean,
like
good coverage by Nate, though. I mean, there's not much more he could have done other than
just untimely that happens to be the game winner. If that happens in the middle of like the, you know, 2nd quarter or something, we're just like, oh, that's a great catch. It doesn't really affect the game, but it's such a spotlighted play when it's literally the game winner.
Yeah. But, you know, Purdue, they've got some good receivers, that Milton Wright, and he's good. And I would put them up there, you know, in top 3 or 4 team in the Big Ten in receivers. And when you throw Rondell in there, they're dangerous. So
possibly the best.
Yeah, with Rondell.
Yeah, when Rondell might be the top three, like, you know, receivers.
Yeah, obviously Ohio State's up there, but I would be hard pressed to find more talent and more proven talent too, because all those guys have been productive at least through stretches of their career thus far. So it's one of those where, yeah, you knew that they were going to eat, and U of I did generate some pass rush. I mean, so that was kind of Dan, you were talking about guys being out on the defense. The one kind of one thing I would have liked to have seen was Keith Randolph get out and mix that rotation, because as good as Owen Carney played on some plays, and I loved Owen Carney. Dan can attest to this. When we were talking, I think it was after his freshman year, so after the 2017 season, I remember being really high on him and thinking he could bounce back for a nice sophomore campaign. Some of those, like the penalties, the offsides that he had, and the roughing the passer especially – I get that it's bang bang and that, you know, they were a step away, but you can't be hitting a quarterback in the helmet. You can't be doing that. Like, you can push him. You can push him because you're a half step away. And I, as long as you don't do it where you throw him back so far that he immediately bangs his head and then the optics of it look bad. But you can't. You are looking at him. You're both upright. You can see him in his throwing motion. You don't have to touch him. At least you can change your hand position so that you're not hitting him up near the face. Like, I get that you're probably trying to bat down a ball or something. Like, that's how your body's naturally thinking of it. But then you got to have the presence of mind to get your hands down so that you're not hitting him in the face, because that was a drive there where that ball got thrown up and almost picked off, and you might have been able to stall at the drive. And who knows what it, you know, I talked about the butterfly effect on the last podcast, but who knows what happens then if maybe you don't have that's the one drive that where you get them to go. I don't know if that was I don't think it was a three and out per se, but where you stall them, you know, pretty early. And then you build off of that momentum in the first half. That's the thing, too, is it was a first half drive where then, okay, you start building off that. And then the second half, maybe played out the same way. We were still playing pretty stout defense. I don't know. It's just that was frustrating where he didn't really have the and he bounced back. To his credit, he bounced back and had some really nice plays. But
hat trick.
Yeah, to have the accountability factor that is Keith Randolph behind him might help alleviate some of those mental mistakes. And maybe he still has the upside. He's looking behind his shoulder, over his shoulder, I should say, and thinking, oh, if I make some dumb plays or if I don't have a couple sacks here, then maybe Keith Randolph comes in. So it would be nice to get him back, but hopefully he, you know, learns from that. But it I don't know if at this point, when you have these, I know I've said it a couple times over the past couple podcasts, but if you keep having these mental errors or just these dumb penalties come up, like what's going to change at this point? Like, I don't, how is that not coached out of you? Because that's not really, like, kids are going to be, like, they're teenagers or young 20-year-olds. Like, they're going to make dumb, you just need to have some level of accountability there. And I don't know, Mikey, if you can speak to that a little bit. We've all been coached up, so we know what, like, that feels like. But, man, it's just, you would hope that doesn't keep happening.
Yeah, you know, I think it's, like you said with Owen, you know, that rough in the passer where he, you know, hit the quarterback right in the face mask. You know, it's like, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, like, watching, like, Alabama, watching Ohio State, watching, you know, those top programs in the country, you never see, you know, very rarely do you see mistakes or penalties like that. Because those, you know, those swing momentums, those change games, you know, those are 15-yard penalties. And, you know, those really good teams, they don't have that. And it's, like, Owen's a senior. He should know better, right? Anything to the face, no matter what, is going to be a freaking penalty. Yeah,
especially
so
on the quarterback.
On the quarterback. So it's, you know, until we start, you know, working those out, like you said, John, you know, it's not much is going to change, unfortunately. But, you know, dumb teams like that, they don't win games. You know, the more disciplined, the more mature, those teams win games.
Yep, and that goes back to coaching, like you said. A lot of times, I mean, the kids should know better too, but that needs to be, you know, start from the top. Johnny Newton on the defense line, he had a heck of a game.
Yeah, wasn't he highest graded true freshman in the country or something?
Oh yeah,
I saw that by PFF.
Yeah, he nice. He played a heck of a game. I thought, you know,
he's so good.
He's really
gonna
good.
Be so good.
Very
Newton's law.
That's right. Newton's love.
We gotta think of the t-shirts.
Fumbles, something along those lines.
I thought I saw that on Twitter. Who said that?
Equals fumbles.
Said something about it. Yeah, yeah. We'll come up with a better one. Put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah, we shouldn't be brainstorming
on defensive player of the year in a couple of years. But if he plays like he did, on Saturday, we might see him as a defensive lineman of the year or something down the line, because I think Lovey compared him to Henry Melton, the former Bear, who was a running back at Texas and was converted to a defensive lineman. And Johnny Newton, same story, I think, was a running back on his high school team. And even this summer, I remember seeing, I think, a clip on Twitter of just the lineman running the stairs. And he was like 15 stairs
awesome.
Ahead of the other guys.
Dude, I saw that. I'm like, who is that guy?
True freshman.
When they got that recruitment, because they flipped him from Maryland, that was just like, and most people saw it who are at least Atlanta fans, and maybe that's just our optimistic thinking, but you watch that guy's high school tape.
Yeah, he looks like a four-star, maybe a borderline five-star even with – some of his highlights. He had, I think he had like 16 sacks in high school or so, like something pretty good for however many games.
He had unreal numbers.
Like eight to nine games.
He was playing. It didn't look like he was playing like tomato cans either. Like he was.
No, he was a good high school program.
And he was looking athletic while he was making the plays. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, I'm just, you know, big and kind of in the right position. No, he was. His film was unreal. So I think most people were kind of excited when they knew about Johnny Newton and seeing that clip. Dan, I remember we were talking about that, and I think it was just, oh, that made me so happy seeing that. And it's kind of why, like, you know, you see a guy like him getting more snaps than Calvin Avery. And that also speaks to why you want as many high recruited guys you can get on like a roster, because like you can't try and find as many diamonds, because some guys like Calvin Avery who are four stars kind of flame out, and high rated three stars like Johnny Newton, then sometimes like they hit at high, you can't just be relying on this like, you know, low three star borderline two star to come in and be the replacement for Calvin Avery. Not saying that, like, I don't know, let's throw like Anthony Shipton out there, who hasn't, I know he got to campus late or something like that, but if he was maybe the reliance upon guy, it's like, I don't know if that's quite going to be the thing that's going to replace Calvin. Now, granted, they're playing different positions, so I shouldn't, like, one's a nose tackle, one's a three tech, so I shouldn't be, you know, comparing Calvin Avery and Johnny Newton that much. But in terms of like, okay, you got these highly recruited guys, and you see why you need to get as many of those as possible, it's because then you get those, like a guy like that, or even like Bennett Williams, who just, well, he wasn't highly recruited, but sometimes you get those guys where it's just true freshmen and you see it click and you're like, oh, this is awesome. We hopefully have four more years of Johnny Newton just absolutely tearing stuff up.
Yeah, definitely. I just pulled up his high school film, dude. Oh my gosh. The first play when he was swinging that like quarterback, I was like, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
So
Clearwater Central Catholic. That's what.
Yeah. He
shout out.
He's going to be fun to watch, you know, him develop over the next few years. I'm excited for that. And, you know, obviously, like we just said, he had a great game Saturday. Yeah,
got
so.
That paw in there on the in the red zone.
Yeah,
the
big old
the
paw.
Back.
Yeah.
That was a great play. And it's like, I feel like, you know, us as fans, we probably – I was saying that to Dan, actually. I was like, I hate that at the start of every drive. It's kind of like, I feel like I just say, like, oh, we need to get a turnover here.
We said that so many times. And we talked
exactly,
about last
–
on the
sucks.
Preview, right? We What did we say? One of you – or both of you said
I
three
said,
turnovers, right?
Yeah, we got
yeah,
two.
I said three turnovers
two,
was
I
my
two and a half.
Number.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we didn't get it. And we didn't win the game.
Well, I know, Dan. I think, you know, you and I were talking. You're like, we're almost to your number or something.
That's
and
right.
I was like, yeah, but it doesn't really account for four turnovers on our offense. You know,
true. We gotta make it a turnover
I truly
differential.
Think, though, if we would have got one more turnover, I think we would have won that game. Even with our offense having four turnovers and a couple turnovers on downs, like, we definitely would have at least tied it up, went into overtime or something.
Yeah, if you stop one of their drives on a turnover and give yourself good field position, you
if that
ball
bounces off Isaiah Gay's helmet, or if that weirdly egg-shaped ball bounces off of a round object like a helmet at just a slightly fraction of an inch
two degrees different angle.
Exactly. It might go right into Jake Hansen's lap, and he's, you know, getting tackled by Aiden O'Connell into the end zone instead of Aiden O'Connell batting it down right in front of Jake Hansen's face.
We need like, the engineering school to fact check that, but I agree.
Yeah. Or Johnny Newton.
Newton's laws. Yeah.
We need Newton to check that one out.
Yeah, that's like that could have been the turnover. That could have
been
the third
difference.
Turnover, and then we would have been going for the dub. And I don't know if they would what trick play Rod would have had. I feel like he's got to have like a 2-point conversion play just to take that kind of scenario, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, Lovie said he was going to go for it on
exactly.
For two.
Yeah, yeah.
I assume they. I mean, Mikey, you can speak to this, but is there one play that you guys are like, this is our play? Like, if we ever need to go in the bag and we have one play to. You know, in whatever situation it is, like, this is the play we're running. This is the one that works every time in practice. Do you guys have something like that?
Yeah. In terms of 2-point conversion, definitely. We usually have, you know, more than one. It's usually about anywhere from, you know, 2 to 3, but you have one that
it's
is
like, this
your
is the
bread
one.
And butter.
Yeah.
Like, you run that every week. And, you know, generally after week one, you'll throw in another one, but you'll still have your main one that, if you don't use it, you keep it. You know, you keep it in the bag until you need to pull it out. And by the time you run it, you know, you've already ran it 100 times. So
did yours involve you, or were you a decoy?
No, yeah, it did. And
in the backfield,
it's a bunch of different
Wildcat Mikey Dudek.
No, I wish. There was actually one practice. Rod put me in at quarterback, and like to run like a little option Wildcat, yeah. And I did like the cadence, like down, set, hike, or whatever. And he looked at me. He's like
this
never
kid's
again.
Never
how
played
much
quarterback.
Did you, like, how much did you change your voice? That's the question,
yeah, dude. I don't know. I like blacked out. I was like so excited because I've always been wanting to do like the Wildcat, and got my chance. I think I probably got like 5 or 6 yards. Again, it was in practice. You don't really hit, but
Rod's like, that's enough of that. This kid's a wide receiver. Keep him out of the backfield.
Yeah, it's all about the cadence. You gotta really like sell it with a deep voice and just really, really put on. Yeah. Even though I don't know, but that's pretty funny.
Speaking of guys who could run trick plays, Kyron Cumbie, he got out there a little bit and made a couple nice plays. I liked seeing him out there. 77 or something on the PFF grade for him as well, which was pretty high. I think he was out there for 9 snaps or something like that, but he was involved on 2 big plays, a 9-yard run and then like a 17-yard pass. And it was just good seeing some speed out there and just mixing it up and getting the ball in different guys' hands.
Yeah, I like it. You know, we've talked about him before. He's obviously, you know, a little bolt of energy, super fast, low, compact to the ground. So it's good to see him, you know, get some touches, get in the mix a little bit. I believe it was his first career catch, right? So good to see him out there. And yeah, I believe it was. I think it was his first time touching the ball. Is that correct?
No, the announcers had that wrong because he had to play against Akron. Yeah, I don't know if it was a pop pass or not, because that's technically a catch then. But he had a sweep, like a jet motion, either sweep or pop pass to him against Akron last year.
Yeah, I thought I remembered that too. So when they said that, I was a little confused.
We'll send something into Big Ten Network. James Laurinaitis.
Yeah, James Laurinaitis seems to bring up Mike Epstein's fumble every time he touches the ball. Oh, he fumbled week 1 against Wisconsin. It's like, dude, we get it, you know?
We watched it.
Like But no, back to Kyron Cumbie. Good to see, you know, Rod and Lovey and those guys get other guys involved.
Also, quick little tangent for me, at least on, I think it was the Kyron, that first run. The downfield blocking by the wide receivers, and Mikey, you can I know I've espoused that I was a wide receiver back in high school, so I always kind of like blocking because it's pretty fun, but you can speak to it better, at least in the Big Ten level. But it felt like there was 2 or 3 runs where when you see guys getting into the frame, they were disengaged and like they were going to engage. But like last year, you have that was the one great thing about Caleb Reams. That dude, you saw him get into the
block.
Frame. Yes. And he was locked up. He wasn't holding anyone, but he was in there, and you knew that there was at least 10 more extra yards after that because his man wasn't going to be taking down the ball carrier, and then it was based on the pursuit of the defense, whether that guy was going. And there was a couple times. I know KC Washington actually graded out pretty well in his blocking grade.
I saw at least one from him where I was like, come on, man, throw a block.
The Daniel Bebe touchdown, he had a really nice block to get him into the
end
zone.
That was good blocking.
But he had 2 or 3 where I was like, oh, man, if you're already engaged, dude, if you're already, like, in his shirt, then that might go the distance. Like, that you have that kind of speed in Kyron Cumbie or a Mike Epstein or Chase Brown who can take it if you just give them a little bit more
of engagement. Yeah.
Exactly. Instead of just like, oh, now I see that the defender is coming up to me, I'm going to start engaging him now because the play is obviously coming towards me.
Yeah.
Yeah, receiver blocking is huge. You know, I think in 2018, we saw a ton of long runs out of Reggie Corbin. And, you know, that happens with the receivers blocking downfield because there's not many guys that can outrun angles on DBs. I can attest to that. but those deep plays, those long runs, momentum swinging plays, those happen with those receivers, you know, blocking downfield. And it's tough to engage for a while, you know, especially with those sideline judges watching you. You know, if you're in there, you know, because you're taught to get in, you know, inside his chest there. If that DB tries to break away and you're still in there for any bit of a half a second, that play's coming back. So there's a fine line there that I think some guys, you know, you see it get called all the time on those long runs.
Yeah.
I think some guys are a little hesitant on, you know, staying engaged for that long due
to, afraid to make,
you know,
a mistake that could cost you versus, you know, finishing
taking
the play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's where that pops up.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's obviously a trade off. You got to be careful because the last thing you want is to, you know, he breaks it all the way and then comes back because you held on 1 second too long. Because a lot of times it does come down to, or, you know, you see a guy hold on to the block for an extra second and the guy breaks it and they call it back and you're like, he didn't need to be engaged at that point. Why are you holding on? So it goes both ways.
Exactly. Yeah.
But see, I also think that's like, if it's more of a consistent effort thing, like I don't think Caleb Reams, like going back to him just because he was so great at it, I don't know if refs were ever looking for that per se, because they knew that every single play that he was out there stock blocking, he was taking care of that man. And it wasn't like sometimes you'll have wide receivers run a phantom route, even though it's a run play, to try and get a guy off the line, or maybe because he doesn't want to block, or maybe because the play calls for it. I'm not saying it's just an effort issue, but if you're every single time, and especially a guy like Donnie Navarro is really good at it, where he'll get inside a guy, mm-hmm. and he'll be blocking him immediately. And it's one of those where if you're doing that every single play, you're building that technique and you're learning, you know, pretty much inexperience how to block said guy and not do it in a way that then draws a penalty. But then you're also building this rapport, even if it's just subconsciously in the ref's mind, where, okay, that guy's always on his man. Like, it's not one where he's going to be, oh, if he's locked up, I got to watch him because he doesn't usually do that. And maybe I'm throwing a flag, and maybe it's because, yeah, you're right. Maybe sometimes it is unwarranted, or maybe it is a fine line, but that's just you know, it's ticky. That's me being real ticky tack, but especially in a game like that, if you can get those big plays, because Mikey, you were so right. In 2018, you had some of those long runs because of that. And if you can get more of those explosive plays, the offense needs that, obviously. So that's just those are the little things right there that can make the difference.
Agreed. Yep.
All right. So it's a lot of talk about Purdue. I don't know how we want to tie this up, but I mean, personally, just
put a bow on it.
Yeah. If you want to put a bow on it, but
that's right. We should have had talking about angles and DBs and you, Mikey. We should have had your number one hater Robert on to reminisce on all, like, you know, 20 times that happened. You know, he's got that logged.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
he's got the
oh,
list.
Because anytime he scouts you so much,
he wants to come at you. He just pulls a clip of like an Ohio State DB chasing you down or something.
I personally, he had the angle on me.
Yeah, well, that's what we'll say. That's what you'll tell your kids someday.
Oh yeah.
Personally though, Purdue, obviously, you know, they were 7-point favorites. That's about what it was given the circumstance. I thought Illinois played a pretty good game. You obviously end up being disappointed when it's a close game and you don't come out on top, but after letting it digest a little bit, I think the boys played pretty well given the circumstances. So, you know, you regroup and you get a quarterback some extra reps in practice this week and see if you can capsize the boat of Minnesota next week. But I don't know, any final thoughts from you guys on the Purdue loss?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, you know, worse than it was, but that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily, I'm not satisfied with the outcome, right? It was right there, and it's like,
couple
man,
plays.
Like it's a couple plays. It's 5 years. I just want to start winning, you know. And it's like, you can be happy about a loss for so long, but at some point, like,
the moral victories don't
win.
Do it for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't know. And I just see guys on the team like tweeting and retweeting stuff after games. And I'm like,
I actually said that to John.
That bothers
too.
Me to the core. It's like, okay, you had a good game, but you guys lost. Like, what are you trying to parade around about?
An hour after the game, they're all, you know, retweeting like, hey, nice catch today.
Tweeting.
Nice, not to name any names, but like, you know, just guys, you know, individual accomplishments, just retweeting. Thanks for the shout out. It's like, you lost the game. Like, aren't you sad or like, still have a fire that you didn't win that game, at least for several hours? I mean, maybe the next day you wake up and you feel a little better about it or something, but I was with you because I saw a few,
you know, retweets and things and posts about themselves. And I thought, you know, what are we doing? You guys lost the game.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's a culture thing. You know, that's from the leaders of the team not coming down on those guys, right? And it's sad to see. And, you know, even like not only just Twitter, like Instagram, like guys reposting like stories. And I'm just like, as a fan, like I know I was a part of the program for 5 years, but now I'm on the outside as a fan. Like, honestly, it pisses me off, you know, like it just to keep it plain and simple. And it's just like enough is enough, right?
Yeah.
And I could go on about this for the next 3 hours. Win some games and
then
tweet.
Then you can sell it.
Then
yeah.
Cut the line at Red Lion and have yourself a night.
Yeah, not right now. Coronavirus.
Yeah, can't be getting more guys on that list and canceling games.
Yeah. Gotta be smarter.
All right. Let's leave it there. That's the Purdue recap.
I'm fired up now, Dan. I don't know if we can leave it there. Well, hey, you're not gonna want to miss friggin' Friday's episode. That's for sure.
All right, Mikey.
It's gonna be a good one.
He's little send preview some, of that. I've already some, talked myself into the guys being 2-2 after week 4. All
right, we need you getting after guys like you got after Palcho for being too nice. I need a Mikey Dudek inspirational like rant or something to get these boys angry and ready to go, because you know PJ Fleck is gonna have his guys ready.
Yeah
cuss him out on Twitter.
I'll see what I can do.
You won't. All right. All right, episode 3 Purdue recap. We'll see you guys later this week.